My name is Robert Hampson. I'm a qualified barrister, and I have a PhD in acoustic comfort. And I've been living in Hong Kong for the last 20 years, but for the last 6 months, I've been living in Suffolk, close to an air base, an American air base in Lakenheath. Gosh, I don't really like England, and the only reason why I left Hong Kong was forced vaccination. But apart from that, Hong Kong is a far better place to live than England. It's the little things. You can go to a bank in Hong Kong and take out as much of your own money in cash as you want. In England, they limit me to £500 a day. I don't like that. And if England feels a lot more restrictive than Hong Kong. There seem to be more cameras here, believe it or not. And just everything you do is you've got to fill in a form. Everything's very slow, very bureaucratic. And whereas in Hong Kong, people have the can-do attitude and things get done in a very efficient way. So I'm not content in England at all, in summary.
Okay, so the authorities in China have been imposing even more lockdowns over the last few weeks.
They have. I mean, I think there's an important conference coming up in China for Xi Jinping, where they're going to start setting out some long-term policy objectives. And there has been quite a lot of protests across China. I think we've talked about this before, including in Wuhan, where, of course, the so-called virus came from. Was in Wuhan, that had a lot of protests, and across China, protests, and in Hong Kong, protests. And COVID came along at exactly the right time to stop protests. And whenever a big event occurs, there seems to be an outbreak of COVID, and people seem to be locked down and stopped from protesting in any way.
This zero COVID policy, the New Zealanders have tried to emulate it and got themselves tied up in knots. I mean, this is a bit like, I mean, I think it was Catherine Gunn on our show that looked at the similarity between zero carbon and zero COVID. What's the situation like now in Hong Kong with the Chinese government just basically treating it just as another part of China now?
It's certainly feeling that way. And the probably straight answer is yes, unfortunately. In terms of the COVID policy, this week, children as young as five now have to have a COVID vaccine every 3 months. So it's a vaccine every 3 months in order to go out with their parents to restaurants or to go to schools or to enter any public places. So it's a vaccine every 3 months for 5-year-olds and above. That's where we are in Hong Kong.
We've had some big changes this week. We've said goodbye to Queen Elizabeth II. We've also said hello to Liz Truss. What do you make of the? It's all a bit much to pack into 1 week, isn't it?
I've over the years, as you grow older and get older, you tend to realize that things are not as random as perhaps as you used to think they were. And Liz Truss is, if you go on the World Economic Forum website, she features on their website. She's prominently on their website. So she's linked to the World Economic Forum. And the Queen's very last thing she did was to appoint Liz Truss, World Economic Forum person, to be the leader, the Prime Minister of United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And that leaves now many WEF leaders controlling countries from New Zealand to Canada to the Netherlands and the UK. And on top of that, we've now got Prince Charles coming into play, who again is a big supporter of the World Economic Forum and all that it stands for, particularly low carbon policies and fighting what he thinks is a problem of climate change, which any geologist or person with any sense of history would know is a non-event. Planet Earth is 4.5 billion years old. It's been massively warmer in the past. It's been massively cooler in the past. And the driver of climate is the sun, and it's got nothing to do with carbon dioxide. So to have Prince Charles in charge, World Economic Forum supporter, Liz Truss in charge, World Economic Forum supporter, is not good news, I don't think, for the UK. There's this so-called manufactured energy crisis, and I say manufactured because prior to being a barrister, I spent half a dozen years in the energy industry, calculating energy prices. And England or the United Kingdom has massive supplies of oil, coal and gas. We could supply ourselves very cheap energy, not a problem. And energy prices here could be as low as China. So this energy crisis has been manufactured by people in the World Economic Forum and the United Nations by pushing this low carbon dioxide or low carbon agenda, which has pushed solar panels, it's pushed wind power, and it's closed down all the fossil fuels in England. And so the real driver of this fuel crisis is the World Economic Forum, United Nations, and their sponsored green groups. And that's where people really need to focus on this and say, this is the problem here. It's removal of the fossil fuels that's causing this crisis. It's got nothing to do actually with the Ukraine thing, and it's got nothing to do with global warming. It's because these green groups who are sponsored by the World Economic Forum, by Bill Gates, that have lobbied and brought into place policies that have closed down mines, oil and gas, and forced up energy prices for everybody. That's where the real problem is.
Yeah, it's not just energy prices though, Robert, is it? It's also, we're seeing food prices starting to go up, and we're also seeing farmers being told, oh well, actually we'd rather you didn't have any livestock, because we think it's cruel, and it's bad for the environment to have livestock. We would rather you just grew plants and beans and things like that instead. And they're being told to do this, but there's been no real proper public debate as to whether the people want this or not.
I think, again, it's control of the media, and people have been probably actually quite concerned or scared to say anything that criticises climate change, global warming or low carbon policies. If people say that, they're ridiculed and sort of demeaned by other people if you say that. So people just have to kind of feel they have to go along with it. In the work environment, in the social environment, in the media environment. So people just don't speak out against it. But again, the root cause of food has been, well, energy prices increase the cost of transporting food. And again, the policies of the World Economic Forum, United Nations and the Green Groups has been, as you say, to get rid of livestock and also to get fertilizers, which produce carbon emissions, off the land, so that reduces the productivity of the land and again pushes up the prices of food. So again, it's these green policies that are causing the problems. Another thing living in Suffolk is I do meet a few farmers and I do talk to them, and they're actually paying something like about £1,000 an acre per year for not growing anything on their land. So there's actually a financial incentive just to buy land, do nothing with it and get paid. So the policies are all wrong here.
Now, look, the NATO powers, particularly economically, have also spent quite a lot of time bullying countries over the last few decades. I mean, I'm thinking specifically about Libya, the way that the country was economically attacked through sanctions and other means. And it does seem as if also, of course, sending in mercenaries under the guise of, you know, these sort of heroic civil warriors or whatever. It seems as if maybe these powerful financial forces and military forces may even have practiced on these countries and be now turning some of these tactics on us.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there's a classic book out called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And I think it's John Perkins that wrote this a long time ago. And he's got a revised edition out as well. And he was employed by the American government. And he would go into these poorer countries and start large projects, dam building, energy building, construction projects, anything that costs lots and lots of money. And the American government...
You know what, sorry to interrupt you, I'm thinking about HS2, Hinkley C.
Oh, but the nuclear... Yeah, okay, the nuclear power stations. These are also problematic as well. I think there's...
Yeah, I don't want to divert you. I'm saying, look, you know, yes, you're right. I mean, there are these big financial projects going on in the UK right now.
They are. So I was working up to that. By drawing analogies of what happened in other parts of the world and how that policy is now being applied to the UK. Originally, it was America that was driving countries into debt through large projects, and then when they couldn't pay for them, the American government walked straight in and said, okay, will write off all your debt, but will own all your assets. What's happening in the UK right now with these big projects, as you say, the Hinkley nuclear power stations, but also the way the government's
spending money on just about everything, is it's driving this country into debt. Same in Canada, same in France, same in the Netherlands, so I think same in New Zealand. Debts are increasing, certainly in England. And what I think is happening is what America is doing to those countries, World Economic Forum, United Nations, are doing to England right now. Everything is being driven into debt, and then they will walk in into the UK and say, right, we'll write off all your debt, but we'll own all your assets. That's what's happening here, and this is what Liz Truss is going to bring about. When she's got this energy price cap brought in, it sounds nice, like we've got to cap it, but it's not. What she's doing, she's taking taxpayers' money, and the energy companies are still getting paid for this. They're still receiving income. There's no loss to them. Households get their bills capped, but the government pumping in more debt into the economy, and as you have more debt in the economy, these outside bodies, the World Economic Forum, United Nations, their bodies will then take over all the energy companies in the UK. They'll just take them over. This is what's happening in the UK right in front of our eyes.
You're right, these things have been tried in abroad, and it's just almost it's like they're making a mess in their own back garden now. But anyway, look, what about the passing of Queen Elizabeth? Because we've now got King Charles III. He's there was some speculation as to whether he would pass it over to William, but obviously with an ego like Charles's, that's not really going to be likely. He's had some pretty dubious friends. He's been in the Mail on Sunday, almost every Sunday this year, with some other scandal. And, of course, the Queen never would attend the marriage to Camilla back whenever it was. I think was it about 2007 or something, because she said that it was that the church was more important than Charles. Well, Charles has also said he's not a Christian, he's a defender of all faiths, and that actually they're all the same. So there's going to be some big changes there, aren't there?
There are. I mean, Prince Charles, if we look, there's plenty of photographs of him throughout the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. So there's nothing secretive about this or revealing about it, but there are photographs of him with Jimmy Savile in many different situations, many different occasions for over four decades. We now know from a Channel 4 investigation that the BBC News early in 1971, Jimmy Savile was essentially committed acts of paedophilia. So to actually have King, who's had relationships with high-profile person like Savile, may, we don't know for certain, but it's certainly something that should be looked at, may compromise the ability of the King to actually do the best for this country if someone did have a hold on him. And I think that needs to be looked at.
Well, one thing's for sure, Savile made it clear to people that threatened him that he had powerful friends.
He did. I've seen those interviews with Jimmy Savile. Again, he's from Yorkshire. I'm from Yorkshire. I mean, so you do even pay more attention to someone like Savile. I mean, he always gave me the creeps as a kid, and I don't think he ever liked music. But he did say that to powerful friends, and he was also friendly with Edward Heath, who took the UK into the European to European Union. And again, that was a mis-selling. And so was he behind that? I don't know. But he certainly had friends with prime ministers and future kings. So the way the whole system works is if you have – the system likes to get people in power that it can control, and it does this through people like Savile for the British royal family and Epstein to influence America. I mean, Epstein, again, was friendly with Gates. And look what Gates is doing with forced vaccination all around the world. And if you look what Prince Charles is doing, he's promoting the global warming agenda. There's two ways you're going to control people. One is through vaccination passes, and the other one is through carbon dioxide emissions. And you've got two very influential people, Charles in England, Gates in America, who've had relationships with people known to be paedophiles, and that should be a concern to everybody. And I would have thought it being Prince Charles's best interest and the country's best interest to get that out in the open early on and, you know, discuss that and make a clean break of it. I think that's very important for any king, future king of this country.
Yeah, well, Charles is not that sort of person. He likes to just ignore these things. Like, for example, anything to do with Princess Diana, you know, you're not allowed to mention the name anywhere near him. It's just, you know, he would make sure that he never sees you again if you were to do that.
That's what, you know, this is what people can do. They've got very powerful people around them who can do whatever they want to whoever they want, whenever they want.
That means you end up being surrounded by sycophants, don't you?
You do, but also more important than that, you have real contacts and real power to people to say, you know, you do harm to this person if they cause me trouble. And that goes on in the world, unfortunately. And Charles can do that.
Yeah, so how do people follow your work? You got a blog or something, Robert?
I don't do anything like that at all. I probably should do, but I don't. Can I just make one last point on the Yorkshire Electricity? When I worked at Yorkshire Electricity, they were sold, the shares were sold at £1. On the day they were traded, they were fetching, I think, £1.97. So you could almost double your money if you bought Yorkshire Electricity shares. The biggest owners of those shares were the Rothschilds, the bankers, the Rothschilds who actually did the banking for them. I think members of the public could buy about £500 of these shares, and they thought they were doing well because they could double their money by selling them. As an employee, I could buy 6,771 of these shares and double my money. But if you were the bankers doing this, so the Rothschilds were the bankers for these privatized utilities, they had billions of pounds worth of shares, and they would double their money overnight and if they wanted to sell them. But I think more importantly, they gained control of real physical resources, and that's what privatization
did on the infrastructure of the nation, didn't they?
They did, and then that has been, again, those powers have been more consolidated. And so when we talk about capping energy prices and the rest of it, we need to go back to basics. These companies were sold at about half their value, probably significantly less than half their value, because the shares were much higher than that again. So they were sold off too cheaply. And that's a fundamental problem with the British energy market. And
yeah, well, maybe they'll be renationalised. I think there's been some talk about that recently. That seems to be the only solution to me. Anyway, look, Robert Hanson, thanks ever so much for joining us again.
Okay, thank you, Tony.